and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist. I'm Tom Edwards. On this week's programme, Urban Heroes.
10 years ago, Mundano started pimping carts in his local neighbourhood, getting to know the catadores, who showed him a new way of looking at Sao Paulo.
City living is made better by ordinary, everyday heroes. And while we'd love to profile them all, this week we want to give you inspiration for the new year and help make our cities better places to live. From garbage collectors in Brazil to citizens coming together in Athens to help their city look better than ever. Plus, a crowdfunding platform that wants to provide training to London's homeless. That's all coming up in the next 30 minutes here on The Urbanist with me, Tom Edwards. And we start today's programme in Athens, where a group of committed citizens has taken the broken windows theory very seriously. The financial crisis, which hit Greece nearly 10 years ago, brought a rise in vandalism and poverty in the capital. With that as the background, a group of like-minded citizens came together to create Atenistas, an urban intervention platform that does everything from painting city steps to organising tours. Our own Daphne Karnazes reports.
Atenistas is an organization in Athens that organizes and promotes these local voluntary neighborhood, essentially, interventions through grassroots initiatives. And by that I mean that it's not just one person, it's groups of citizens all together in the city that drive change in the city through these local initiatives. It's been around for 5 years now. And I have to say, although I thought at first that it's quite idealistic, you know, the concept is that what if everyone who loves Athens all got together and made a difference? But they've actually done some really great stuff. The way it works is you can call them yourself as a citizen and report or tell them about a problem in your neighbourhood, something you want improved or fixed. In Greece, the local councils are notoriously ineffective at dealing with some of these things. You know, you could report a pothole on the street and it could take months on end to be fixed. So in this case, this is a team of volunteers ready to hit the ground running. They organise themselves, they all sit down together and brainstorm the specific brief at hand and think about what they can do to improve it. They're sponsored by various companies. They manage to get materials, paint, whatever they might need from these companies. And they've really managed to do some great stuff in transforming various public spaces. So they're actually really simple interventions, but they can have quite an impact. It wouldn't so much be, you know, fix my window or something that belongs to a specific individual. It's more, as I said, for public spaces. So one example is, you know, if there's this specific neglected pavement, quite a big pavement in the center of Athens where people would park illegally, they would leave rubbish bins. And what they did is they simply built a bench and they put this on this pavement and they planted a tree, they painted the bench and they put hand-painted signs showing different nearby landmarks and walk routes and this sort of thing. And it really cleaned up that specific spot nicely, and now it's become quite a nice gathering spot for people to sit down. Another one of my favourites is, for example, a rundown children's playground. They turned it into what they call a candy playground, so the theme is candy, so they've sort of painted things like the swings and, you know, the red and white candy stripes. And another important initiative that they've done many times is tree replanting. So as you know, Greece has lots of wildfires during the summer and we have large swaths of trees that are burned to the ground, so quite a big catastrophe, and what they do is get together and replant them. So there's lots of small initiatives like this, and I think it is quite important, especially this aspect of trees and greenery as well, because Athens is very much a city that has quite few public parks and greenery in general. We do have pocket parks and squares with benches and fountains. Our main green sort of oasis in the city centre, I'd say, is the National Gardens in Athens. But what little space we do have, we really do need to protect. There's also a social aspect to Atenistas. It's about bringing people together, both the volunteers and also the citizens of the neighbourhoods, of the communities. One aspect of it is the walking tours that they have to highlight the history of the city, both the ancient history but also recent phenomena that we've seen cropping up, such as street art, also a lot of live concerts, live free concerts with youth orchestras bringing musicians together in the squares, in the parks, for everyone to enjoy. Things aren't getting easier in terms of the way people perceive the local councils, the authorities, and how much they can actually rely on them to make a difference. So I think it is one of the key reasons that this has cropped up now is because of the crisis and how people are becoming a bit disenchanted from the people who in the government who's actually supposed to be spearheading these initiatives instead. I think it's a very important time now, and we're only going to be seeing more of these. For Monocle, I'm Daphne Karnizes.
Next, we're heading to Brazil to meet a man working to spread the word about people he says are genuine urban heroes, de catadores who collect trash from the streets to recycle. Tiago Mondano blurs the line between artist and activist. He travels the world painting walls with colourful graffiti, often with environmental messages. But he's made the greatest impact at home in Sao Paulo, starting a dynamic movement to recognise the recyclers for their vital role in keeping the megacity clean. Monocle's Frederick Bernas recently visited Brazil, and he sent this report.
Take a stroll through central Sao Paulo any given afternoon, and you're likely to see men pulling carts full of cardboard, metal, and other junk. These catadores prowl the streets and avenues, combing through bins, dumpsters, or construction sites, searching for recyclable material. They sell their takings to recycle centres, earning a small income and providing essential relief to a city which produces a staggering 18,000 tons of trash every day. That vital service is what inspired artist Tiago Mondano to start his Pimp My Carroça project. As you may have guessed, the name plays on the hit MTV series Pimp My Ride, swapping in the Portuguese word for trash cart. Instead of installing high-grade motors, luxury leather seats, or booming stereo systems, Mondano decorates the carts with colourful slogans that proclaim the value of recycling. He says the importance of the collector's work is matched only by a chronic lack of recognition among society at large.
These people, the catadores, they are real heroes, but are invisible. Nobody notices them on streets. And in Brazil, they collect 90% of all the trash that's actually recycled. So, and you have these special guys that work all day long cleaning the city and don't have like formal jobs, salary, nothing.
10 years ago, Mondano started pimping carts in his local neighborhood, getting to know the catadores, who showed him a new way of looking at Sao Paulo. He loved the idea that their vehicles could act as moving installations, bearing phrases such as trash doesn't exist and recycle your mind.
I was painting like gate doors with messages against a lot of problems in my city, but then I realized that I could also paint the carts of the waste pickers, the recyclable material collectors, and I make them happy, like the self-esteem improve. And it's amazing because they go everywhere on the city, so it's a mobile art, a mobile exhibition, and the city mayor can't buff it, can't cover it with gray paint as they do on walls. And I also try to give voice to these people.
Slowly but surely, Mondano built a social movement, crowdfunding support to form an NGO and recruiting a small army of volunteers. Pimp My Carroça now organizes regular gatherings in public spaces. As well as artists painting the carts, mechanics are on hand to provide structural upgrades, while the catadores are given health checks and safety equipment. The events have been held across Brazil and further afield. Mondano has visited a total of 47 cities in 12 countries over the last 5 years. A Sao Paulo catador called Gabriel is one of nearly 1,200 who have received help from the project.
É uma ideia interessante até mesmo para abrir o olho de muitas pessoas que desvalorizam nós.
It's an interesting idea because it opens the eyes of many people who don't value our work. It can encourage people to come and speak to us. They ask, do you need clothes, a fridge, or anything else? That wasn't happening before, so we are being recognized. It doesn't even need to have anything to do with money. The designs are enough to influence the way we are treated.
Mas eu acho que de algum modo influencia na nossa valorização.
Mundano has also painted huge murals across São Paulo. They often feature green alien people with angry frowns who spread ecological messages in speech bubbles. His latest scheme is Cataqui, a mobile application which works a bit like Uber, but for catadores. The app has a map which helps users find collectors in their area and contact them to arrange pickup. In a city where recycling infrastructure is scarce, but everybody has a smartphone, it will hopefully become a popular tool. Tiago Mundano never imagined that an international movement would grow from his original idea to paint trash carts on the streets of São Paulo. He'd like authorities both home and abroad to use recycling as a way of tackling social inequality on a deeper level.
We can solve many of the social problems in Brazil if we can organize the unemployment people that are in the streets or maybe homeless. We can organize and help them to have their lives back working on recycling. And it's a global problem. A lot of cities in a lot of different countries and everywhere there is recyclable material collectors. And also the global solution to include them and make something big, like to give visibility to these people. They need their rights because they are working public service for free.
The widespread urban injustice of Brazil has inspired thousands of people to support Pimp My Carroça. For me, Mundano is a bit like a Brazilian Banksy, another artist whose work is charged with social commentary. But he goes a step further, backing up his slogans with action, truly demonstrating the power of culture to change lives. For Monocle, in São Paulo, I'm Frederick Bernas.
A report there from Frederick Bernas in São Paulo. And we wrap up our urban heroes here in London, where over the past 10 years, the number of people sleeping rough on the streets has increased by at least 170%. That's a dramatic number, and it only increases when you factor in hidden homelessness, those people only able to find temporary accommodation. With this in mind, the tech entrepreneur and author Alex Stephanie decided to launch Beam, a platform that helps raise funds for traineeships and more. He told Monocle's Carlotta Ribello all about it.
Beam is a completely new way of helping a homeless person to train up and get into work. And it works by crowdfunding employment training. It's actually the world's first crowdfunding platform to help homeless people train up and get into work. Now, Beam takes recommendations of homeless people, we prefer the term members, from registered charities. We match them up with personalized training. So one person might want to be an electrician, another might want to be a teacher or an accountant. And we fund exactly the things that they need in order to progress with their careers and make the most of their talents.
Now, this is something that, especially nowadays, with the rising number of homeless people and people sleeping rough in the streets of London, and also the figure of hidden homelessness, people just crashing in friends' couches and not really being what we consider homeless, but that they are indeed. It seems like the appropriate time to come up with something like this. Now, it's important to make a distinction that Beam is not a charity, is it?
That's right. So Beam is a social impact business and we partner with charities. So at the moment, we're taking referrals from 12 registered charities, including the likes of St. Mungo's, House of St. Barnabas and Thames Reach. I just want to pick up also, Carlotta, on the point that you made before about the different types of homelessness. So the people that we are typically supporting through Beam are in a hostel of some kind. They're not sleeping on the streets. And the majority of homeless people in the UK are actually in some form of temporary accommodation like hostels. They have some stability in their lives. They have a roof over their heads. And what we're doing is helping them progress with their careers, supporting themselves and their families. And we're using technology to make it very easy for anyone out there to help them achieve those things.
Now, how did this idea come along then? What made you decide to create this platform?
So my background is in tech, and at my last company, we did a crowdfunding round, and it ended up being bigger than we'd ever expected. It was actually the largest equity crowdfunding round ever for a startup. And I began to think, could we use this very powerful crowdfunding model to help some of the most vulnerable people in our society? And I think we're proving at the moment that the answer is a very definite yes. The really powerful thing about this model is not only are we able to bring new financial resources to remove financial barriers from people's lives, whether that's the cost of training, whether that's the cost of related things like childcare. But we're also able to bring huge amounts of new self-confidence and self-belief. And let me talk a little bit about that. So what typically happens at the moment is people who find themselves in this position of homelessness are at a low point in their lives and often suffer from lack of confidence, which is itself a barrier. They will come onto the platform, and often their question is, well, hang on a second, why is anyone going to help me? I'm not sure someone's actually going to put their hand in their pocket and fund this. And then what happens is a huge number of people get behind their campaign, sometimes hundreds of people. The largest campaign has 210 funders. And people can write an optional message. And suddenly people are seeing in the most powerful way that people do believe in them and people do want them to succeed. And the supporters, as we call them, can choose to write messages and we pass on these messages. And it's really having a transformative impact on people's self-perception and self-belief.
Now, when we talk here about the training, what sort of trades are we talking about?
So all of the training is provided by the most appropriate third party. We don't do any of that ourselves. And really, the different pathways that people pursue and the different training they undertake is all as unique as the people that we work with. So from the perspective of a homeless person or a member, as we call them, they will sit down with an employee of Beam and we will together work out what exactly the right training is for them. And then we will transparently disclose that on the crowdfunding page itself and support them on that journey. So as a result, people are heading in all kinds of different directions because obviously everyone is different and unique. So some people are becoming teachers, accountants, they're working different roles in construction and electrician. And the interesting thing about Beam is that it's a kind of hybrid between a technology platform, but also a services organization. So when each person joins Beam, they are allocated what we call a member manager. And that member manager is meeting them and speaking to them regularly to really help them progress on this journey through the campaign, through training, and into sustained employment.
Now, you're supported by the Mayor of London. Has that started to have a different impact in the terms of visibility Beam is having through the city?
Yeah, that's right. So we received an innovation grant from the Mayor of London and also from Nesta. And we're really just delighted to be working with them. They've obviously both got very deep experience in homelessness and also in social enterprises. You know, we're just looking forward to really sort of strengthening those relationships as we move into the new year. You know, for us, it's really about collaboration, which is why we're working not only with the GLA and Nesta, but we're working with so many charities. You know, there's a lot of people out there who have been working on this problem a lot longer than we have and have an awful lot of expertise. And our approach to this is really to bring everyone together to play to each other's strengths. So, you know, we are bringing technology expertise, but then all of the charity partners we work with bring a lot of operational expertise and deep knowledge of the problems.
Alex, and perhaps just finally, as we enter the new year, what's in the cards for Beam in 2018? What are your hopes that you could achieve next year?
So for us, this is really about scaling up this model. So far, we've been live just 11 weeks. We've had more than £25,000 flow through the platform. We've had more than 700 people support campaigns. And we're seeing people progressing very well through training. And for us, it's about taking these numbers to a whole new level in the new year. And I think the very refreshing and inclusive part of Beam is that anyone listening to this can be part of that. All they need to do is go to wearebeam.org and there you can meet the members who are on this program. You can support them directly with a donation, or you can make a donation that's divided equally between every member on the platform. So, you know, really our view is that we can make a lot of progress on this problem by working together in a smart way. And everyone has a part to play in solving this problem. That's us with technology. That's with the citizens out there and their own civic responsibility. That's with the charities and, of course, government as well.
That was the founder and CEO of Beam, Alex Stefani, in conversation with our own Carlotta Ribello. You can find more information on their website. Head to wearebeam.org. Finally on today's programme, locals against Apple. At least that's the case in Melbourne. The tech giant won approval to build its new flagship store in Melbourne's Federation Square, host to many cultural events, galleries and museums, such as the Australian Centre for the Moving Image and the National Gallery of Victoria. But the plans have drawn criticism from locals, who say the store will dilute the identity of the public space. Monocle's Ben Rylan, a Melburnian himself, spoke to Daphne Karnazes earlier and started by explaining the history of Federation Square.
Federation Square is an arts and cultural precinct right in the centre of Melbourne. As you step out of Flinders Street Station, the main bustling city centre train station that everyone knows when they go to Melbourne, Federation Square is the very first thing you will see. There's a massive tram stop out the front. Diagonally opposite corner, you've got St. Paul's Cathedral. It's on the banks of the Yarra. It's right next to the arts centre. This is really the centre of Melbourne's arts precinct, and that's what it was constructed to be by the state government back in 2002. It's a very interesting style of architecture as well. Some people might say a controversial style. I'm not entirely sure that that's true anymore. There are a few objections initially when the centre, the square was built, but those have really sort of died away in the years since. Most people do visit Federation Square if they live in Melbourne, if they visit Melbourne, and most people will claim to have really enjoyed their time at Federation Square. It's very well planned. It's set up to be exactly what it was intended to be, and that is an arts and cultural hub. It's not a retail hub. It doesn't feel like a shopping mall. It feels like you are visiting a very, very modern, very contemporary arts space.
So predominantly we see galleries and museums, also cultural events, is that right?
Exactly. So there's a very large outdoor space that you can enter from the Flinders Street side, and that is where they have a lot of outdoor concerts. There's a large screen there for showing various different things. People will show up sometimes to watch something very exciting happening that they can't necessarily get to see in person. Sports events, for example, the Olympic Games, the Commonwealth Games. You can also visit the Australian Centre for the Moving Image, which is a museum / cinema. So the museum aspect allows you to explore the very, very rich screen history in Australia. So that stretches over television, digital, cinema, of course. There's also the Ian Potter Gallery, which is where a lot of Australia's Indigenous art is held as well. That's part of the National Gallery of Victoria. So we're talking, you know, world-class arts space.
So it sounds like quite a strategic move in terms of specific positioning of this new flagship store by Apple. I can see why they do want to open the store there. What do we know about this new store that's just been given the green light?
So the new store from Apple is going to be housed housed on the site that was once home to the Koori Heritage Trust. Koori, of course, being Indigenous Australia. Now, that's where the Heritage Trust still is right now. They're going to be relocated to the Alfred Deakin building, which is also part of Federation Square. So they're not moving too far. But I suppose, Daphne, the difficult part of this could be that Apple, of course, is a private company. They are a multi-billion dollar international company. And traditionally, I mean, from its original intent, that's not what Federation Square is. It's not meant to be a shopping mall. So there will be a lot of people who are looking at this and thinking, well, hang on, this is not what Federation Square is. This is not what we signed up for. I'm not sure that we actually want Federation Square being turned into this retail outlet for premium companies, no matter how fancy and beautiful and designer they might be. You know, no one could walk into an Apple store and claim it to be ugly. At least I wouldn't say so. Aesthetically, Apple is a perfect fit for Federation Square. That's fine. But at the end of the day, they are a retailer. And a lot of people will be looking at that and thinking, what are they doing in Federation Square?
Do you think that's the main concern that the locals are showing right now, the ones who are opposing this?
I think, yes, that will be their main concern. And I think they will also be looking at one of the most important parts of Melbourne's identity, and that is its rich culture. Melbourne calls itself the cultural capital of Australia. And they don't just say that because, you know, they're a bunch of snobs and they really like coffee, although as a Melburnian, that might be true as well. But no, I think the main reason for that is because they take great pride in their culture. It's something that's been built up over many, many years. And the problem with getting good at something is that some others will want to come in and take a piece of that. And I think a lot of people will be looking at this and saying, well, look, Apple, we understand why you want to be part of Federation Square, because this is a great thing that Melbourne is very, very lucky to have right in the city centre. But that doesn't mean that you necessarily can take a piece of it. They may be a rich, rich corporation, but are they necessarily an arts corporation? Are they committed to the same sorts of things that the Australian Centre for the Moving Image is committed to, or that the Ian Potter Gallery is committed to? I think a lot of people would look at that and say, probably not. Maybe we should be a little bit cautious about this. Maybe we should be asking some tougher questions of anyone who wants to be a part of Federation Square before we allow this very, very important slice of real estate to be handed over to someone that we may not really know all that well.
And Ben, we touched on this a bit earlier, but whose responsibility do you think it is to make sure these public spaces are protected? I mean, it seems like people are directing most of their frustration towards Apple as a company rather than perhaps the government itself.
Yeah, I do have to say that I believe that's a little bit misguided. I completely understand the anger that a lot of people might feel towards a company like Apple, especially when you look at an example like this. But at the end of the day, Apple is a private organization. You know, they're a business. They're going to do what makes the best business sense. If people are truly angry about this, I think they should be looking toward the people that they actually vote for. You know, the people that we all decide should be acting in within our own best interests, and that is the government. There are planning ministers. There are local planning authorities whose job it is every day to make decisions within our own best interests as to who is allowed to build what where. And if Apple has been allowed to come into this sort of space and take it over without too many tough questions being asked, maybe people should be asking tougher questions of the people that they are voting for.
That was Monocle's Ben Ryland in conversation with Daphne Karnazes. And that's all for this week's episode of The Urbanist. The programme was produced by Carlotta Ribello and edited by David Stevens. From next Monday, Tall Stories will be taking a short break for the holidays, but will return in full swing in 2018. And do tune in on Thursday when we'll recap some of the best moments of The Urbanist from the year just gone. To play you out of this episode of the programme, here's, who else could it be, Bonnie Tyler with I Need a Hero. Thanks for listening, city lovers.